So actually, I call what I do practical creativity. Lots of times people think that what artists do, they make paintings, they make sculptures, it's not useful, it's not practical. However, I believe what Sakichi Toyoda was teaching and what I teach people is practical creativity. Take those ideas, turn them into useful things that are going to make work easier for people to do, new services and products for customers, and better ways for us to live in society. Creativity is extremely practical.
Hi, everyone. I'm Elizabeth Swan.
And I'm Tracy O'Rourke.
And we are from GoingSixSigma.com. And you're listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast, where we wrestle with tough questions. We talk to thought leaders. We discuss great books with authors. And we get insights from Lean Six Sigma practitioners.
And we let you in on helpful apps, bring you the news, and challenge the status quo so you can build your problem-solving muscles.
Tracy, I think I might have strained one of my problem-solving muscles.
What did you do, Elizabeth?
I don't know. I'm kidding, but that's a good idea for a clinic. We help rehabilitate problem-solving muscles.
I bet you we get a lot of support to do that.
Yeah, we make big money.
We make good money. And we'd be, you know, people be big fans of the place.
Totally.
Hey, Elizabeth, this menu is looking really good today.
It is. For today's special, we've got my interview with our friend Karen Ross, and her bold new book is just out, How to Coach for Creativity and Service Excellence. So it's an awesome combination. Stay tuned for that. Today's appetizer is QI macros. We're continuing our assessment of charting, graphing, and statistical software. For Q&A, we've got a forum question about what control charts are out there. And for the printed page, we give an in-depth look at Karen's new book and how she's busting assumptions about coaching and lean. It's a great day at the cafe, Tracy.
I can't wait. Remember to stay tuned for this month's coupon code in order to get a discount on GoLeanSixSigma.com online training.
Let's get to the appetizer.
All right, we're covering QI macros today. It's funny, I know what macros are, but what's QI stand for?
That is a really good question, and I don't know. I searched the website, I couldn't find a reference. It reminds me of CVS, which is National Chain of Drugstores, and no one knows what that means either. I found out it meant customer value stores, which kind of means nothing either, really. But and they changed it, right? They made it CVS Health because they were like, well, we got to give it something. This means mm-hmm. something. But acronyms are funny like that. You get so used to them, you forget what they mean.
Definitely.
I did find their mission statement for QI macros, which is create a hassle-free America with zero waste, zero rework, and zero harm. I like that. It's big and bold.
Yeah, that is a fun mission. I really like that. It's definitely not boring.
No, I like it. I could get behind that. So here's some of my observations. I've used QI macros over the years, and it's a good program. You can load it into Excel just like Sigma Excel, which we reviewed recently, and it becomes a new menu once you get it loaded into Excel. It costs $279 for a perpetual license. Like Sigma Excel, there's no annual fees and no charge for tech support. It has something called a stat wizard that it knows what stat test you need just by what data you select, which is kind of cool. I didn't get a chance to play with that a lot, but I don't know if that's new, but it's kind of cool. Lots of templates. They've got mind maps and PDPC and others I didn't recognize, plus familiar ones like Fishbone, Five Wise, FMEA, stuff like that.
Cool. There's lots of calculators like a cost of poor quality, a sample size calculator, a road throughput, an ROI calculator, which is cool. People really like calculators. And when you select a template or a calculator, it does open up in a separate Excel document, not necessarily a new tab. Menu bars are packed with many, many drop-down menus, lean tools, diagrams, improvement tools, planning tools. There's lots of menus. You feel like you're at the Cheesecake Factory looking at their menu. It's a little too many menus, right? I'm not really sure what to choose here. So that could be a challenge. The charts and graphs get different treatments and categories. So box plots and scatter plots are together. You can select the columns and then the chart and then just ask if by column for box It's very interesting how it's organized. Histograms get their own menu, including capability and descriptive stats options.
Yeah, they've got control charts. You can select them individually, or you can go for a control chart wizard. So just like the stat wizard, it figures out the control chart you need based on your data. And that might get tricky, but it's a cool idea. Pareto chart stands alone. It's a single option. You just select the test and then the chart. Fishbone opens up a new Excel doc, and you can get small, medium, or large fish, which is kind of cool. And then it's got some other ones, some more menus, right, Tracy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's run charts with three options. You can have a median or an average, and then a dashboard chart, and you select the data and then the chart. There's a whole menu for Excel charts, bar charts, pie charts, or you could just use Excel. It has a nice, simple tutorial, though, that you can run, lots of options for FAQs, and you can sign up for a free tip if you want. The bottom line, it's a nice package. It's easy to create the charts and run the tests.
Yeah. My only nit is back to what you were saying. It's got so many menus. There's so many ways to categorize the charts and templates. It's dense. There's everything imaginable in here. And I've been in the business 30 years, and there's a lot in there I've never heard of. But that means it's useful to a lot of folks. He puts a lot of time and care into this and clearly keeps improving it every year. It's incredibly useful, easy to use. It's a good program.
Cool. And thanks for kicking our butts on reviewing this QI Macros, Elizabeth. I'm Tracy O'Rourke, and you're listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast.
Up next, it's a question from the forum.
There are so many control charts to choose from. I've forgotten most of them.
Me too. The question is, what are the different types of control charts? And this came from our Go-Getters forum. There's already a few folks chiming in, including Bill Eureka and Craig Tickle, who are both Going Six Sigma.com Master Black Belts. It's a great question. There are lots of control charts out there. And the simple answer is, it's usually either the individuals and moving range, or X bar and R and MR charts. Those are for continuous data like time and money and weight and things like that. And then there's a P chart, which is also called a proportions chart, and that's for percent effective and other percentages. And those are kind of the top two, but there's a lot more that I never use and we've both forgotten about. But I recently did a webinar on control charts, and there's a new control chart template for you for free on the website. But there's quite a few other control charts if people want to do deep dives and get technical. The good news is that people are asking about control charts, right, Tracy?
Yes, apparently managers are still overreacting to single data points, and teams need to have some ammunition to share with their manager to show them that it's really just expected variation in the process. So control charts help managers and teams know when to react and when to leave the process alone. And apparently that's happening out there in the real world.
It's good to see what's really happening in a process. I think Craig Tickle used a nice phrase. It's the voice of the process. That's what the control chart gives you. It's not just, you know, the average performance or this week compared to last week or this one data point last year compared to this one data point this year. Control charts give the best information about your process. They let you detect if there's truly change going on. Just like you said, you know, managers can react like, why are we down this week? Why are we up this week? I mean, that was the topic of Mark Graben's new book. Mm-hmm. About measures of success, which was control charts. And that's a lot of what we see management do. So the key with improvement projects, where, you know, we're so hungry for data once we've made an improvement, the team often sees one data point and they're like, we did it. And it's like, wait a second, you should build yourself a control chart and see, did you really shift? Did this really go up or truly go down? And you want to get 20 data points for the control chart. So that lets you know if the improvement is sustainable. So it helps to collect data daily. That's often a good tip for people collecting data. The more often you collect data, the faster you can build a control chart.
And the more you know about your process, because it's the voice of the process. Mm. I really like that too. Well, thanks for all the information on those control charts for now. And if you want to learn more, you can check out the control charts webinar Elizabeth has. It's recorded on our website. And we've got a pretty cool control chart template for you to use. It's an individuals or X bar chart, which we know is one of the most commonly used versions, and it's free, so enjoy it.
I'm Elizabeth Swan, and you're listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast. In a short while, we'll get to hear my interview with Karen Ross, author of How to Coach for Creativity and Service Excellence. But first, it's the printed page.
So this is not a typical coaching book or a typical lean book. And we already know this because it's from Karen Ross.
No, Karen's breaking the mold. This is Karen Ross's new book. It's just out. And Karen is also the co-author of The Six Sigma Way to Service Excellence with Jeff Leiker. So this new book is called How to Coach for Creativity and Service Excellence. And the subtitle is A Lean Coaching Workbook. So it's really a workbook. There's lots of space in here to enter your own information. And the goal is for practitioners to get good at coaching other people by practicing. So the first thing you got to do is find somebody to coach. And they have to have a problem to solve for their customer. And you have to agree to spend 15 minutes a day coaching them. And you have to sign a contract. Karen's got this background in art. So it's got lots of fun illustrations. She gives assignments where you draw, and most people I know she experiences say, oh, I can't draw, but she's like, stick figures are fine. It doesn't have to be pretty. And I've done that in workshops. I know you have too. And people always do fascinating things regardless of how technically good the drawings are, seeing how they envision things. I find that often is just sort of groundbreaking in helping everyone see their vision of a current state or see their vision of the future. And another thing I really appreciate about Karen is that she starts the whole practicing sessions with purpose. You have to get to purpose before you move on to, you know, solving a problem. And so often we dive into fixing things without questioning why we're doing it. And it's not just about making money. If that was the point, it wouldn't matter what you did. I know I've joked with you. If you just want to make money, go sell drugs.
Right.
It's funny, but the reality is, like, you know, it matters what you do.
Yes, I think you're right. A lot of people, when they ask you what's your purpose, an organization or someone at the head of the organization will say, well, we need to make money or we need to make profit. And that's really not a purpose. And that is following what Simon Sinek recommends, start with why. So she's starting with why instead of the what, the who, the when, and the how. And finding purpose isn't easy, actually, or defining purpose isn't easy. And I know that right now, as a matter of fact, there's a lot of my friends that I know that they're being challenged with finding purpose beyond work. I've seen a few empty nester friends struggle with finding a new purpose once the kids are out and they don't need them anymore or as much. And I even experienced some retired folk really struggling with purpose. You know, everyone needs a purpose, and without it, people feel a bit directionless. And even in retirement, it's good to have purpose.
Yeah. And what she finds is when she asks people to recite the purpose, you know, sort of mission statement of their organization, they often have no idea what it is. Like, people start searching websites, like, what is our mission statement? Why do we exist? So they don't even know why the organizations they're working for actually exist. So this is a great starting point. It's also helpful that Karen's got this huge background in the service industry. So she truly gets that we are here to serve our customers. And she makes a point that figuring out purpose is job one, not determining current state. And that's a really careful point, right? Because, you know, establishing current state is often where people jump to right away. Like, where are we now? And I like that challenge. And then she has you, the coach, reflect on your organization's vision. I like that too. So it helps to have a picture, right? Back to those stick figures. You know, what do you see the future looking like? And you draw it as a coach, and the person you're mentoring draws it. Like, what are both your pictures? And then by day four, she gets to coaching practice. So I like that she sets up really clear structure and cadence, lots of guidance leading up to practice, and that it's every single day. Not everyone does coaching every single day. And you and I both know that people get distracted. You know, if there's too much time in between coaching sessions, people get a little lost sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm actually doing a webinar. I'm getting ready for this webinar. It's for leaders. And this is very timely because how do you change leadership? How do you actually change your behavior as a leader? That is so challenging. First, you have to be open to change. You have to recognize what your opportunities might be. Then you actually have to practice good leadership skills daily. And that is very challenging. And just like coaching, it's one of these skills that you need to spend a lot of time on it. And that's why I love this idea that she might be doing. She's saying you need to do this daily because it's those are difficult things to change. I've had a recent sort of humbleness, return to humbleness of my own. I've been spending a lot more time in the home office and I was discovering I didn't have very good practices around movement. I would sit in front of my computer for hours and I only get up to go get something to eat and go to the restroom and that's it. And I need to move more. And so I actually had to just start really creating an agenda and doing something 3 times a day to get moving. And that was actually hard until it became more of a habit.
Yeah, good job, Tracy, with the habits at home. I do the same thing. I've got a stand-up desk. But of course, sometimes I'm tired of standing. I have to sit, but I got to get myself up, right? I got to keep switching it up, standing and sitting. So the other thing she does is focuses on preparing to coach. She wants you to spend 15 minutes getting ready with questions. And she gives examples and lots of guidance. So in this 21-day workbook, days 8 and 10 are basically around a process walk, also known as a Gemba walk. And I love she lets you diagram it any way you want. I think sometimes people get really intimidated by value stream maps. They feel highly technical. It feels like, do I have to be an engineer to get this thing done? And she just says, just diagram it. What happens? You know, what's first, what's second, what's third? And then she follows PDCA. So Plan, Do, Check, Act is basically her overarching model. And there's lots of examples throughout of what she's trying to get you to practice every day. And I just got the book a few days ago, so I'm ready to try it out on someone I can coach. So that's a nice challenge for me. And I like that she approaches things from a really basic human perspective. Karen is always relatable, but she also challenges your thinking. She's kind of like, she's the kind practitioner, but she's demanding. You know, it's a great combo.
Yes, I agree. Karen is one of our faves. It's time to announce the coupon code.
This code is for 20% off any of our Lean Six Sigma training and certification courses. That is white belt, yellow belt, green belt, black belt, and lean training.
And if you've joined us at the Just in Time Cafe, just use coupon code 20 oolong. That's 20OOLONG during checkout. Make sure to use it soon since the coupon code will expire at the end of March. Coming up next is today's special. So Elizabeth, give us a little preview of your interview with Karen Ross.
It's hard to describe Karen. She is a wonderful, innovative, lean thinker. And now she's really pushing for new ways of practicing, coaching, practicing PDCA. And she really busts the mold. So I think you'll enjoy the interview of kind of how she challenges your thinking and challenges the lean community to sort of be creative. It's a great addition.
I can't wait to hear it.
We've got a special guest and a friend of the show with us on today's special. It's the wonderful, consummately talented Karen Ross, president of Karen Ross Consulting and author of the new book, Coaching for Creativity and Service Excellence. Welcome back, Karen.
Hi, Elizabeth. Thank you so much for having me on the show and for such a nice introduction.
Oh, yeah. Karen's a co-author of the Shingle Prize-winning Toyota Way to Service Excellence. Karen brought her service sector experience and collaborated with Jeff Leiker, who wrote the original book documenting what has become known as Lean in his seminal book, The Toyota Way. Karen specializes in teaching organizations how to use creativity in combination with the principles and practices of the Toyota Way. Although a lot of lean consultants come from the manufacturing side of the house, Karen has spent her entire career in the service industry. She's a consultant, a coach, a lean practitioner, and she is a devoted globetrotter. She's a regular contributor to Lean Leadership Ways Industry Week blog and has published articles in the Lean Management Journal and Industrial Engineer Magazine. She's also a few months away from hosting the first global convention on organizational excellence this coming May. We're lucky to grab you, Karen, because you leave, well, you were going to leave tomorrow except for Snowmageddon for some more international travel, and your book is just out. So I want to talk to you about your book.
Thanks so much. And yes, it's really wonderful to be able to talk to you about this book, Toyota Way to Service Excellence. I love it. And I'm really excited to have this opportunity to put my own artistic spin on lean and creativity.
Yeah. And for those that don't know Karen on social media, you will see beautiful jackets, dresses, paintings. You are an incredibly creative human being. So this suits you quite well. Your experience is just carving out this wonderful niche. So for readers unfamiliar, can you let our listeners know how you view the role of creativity within the realm of continuous improvement?
Sure, absolutely. When you think about Toyota, Sakichi Toyota, who was the real grandfather of all Toyota, is known as the king of inventors in Japan. When we think of continuous improvement, oftentimes we're thinking about reacting to problems we know and making those kind of incremental improvements to get better to a standard we already have. When I think about really what Toyota is all about, it's really about creating the things that customers want now and for the future, and creating better ways to work so organizations can flourish and thrive, and that we're making things better, not just for the people who do the work, but for our customers and for society. And really, in thinking about that idea in my own background as an artist, I think that as continuous improvement practitioners, we often focus on tools, we often focus sometimes on principles, and that's what we teach people. And that's really good to help us turn good ideas into reality. However, we've almost never focused on how do you get those ideas in the first place. Because before we can turn something into a better way to work, or before we can create a new service or product for a customer, we have to have an idea of how to do that. And getting those ideas, generating ideas, how to formulate ideas, those are things that we need to focus on first. If you don't have an idea, you don't have something to turn into a reality. That's where creativity comes in.
I love that. And I love your reference to Sakichi Toyota, because I'm hoping I'm getting this right. He invented the automated loom, right? Before Toyota was a car company, there was the Toyota loom.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And in fact, women in Japan, in rural Japan, would weave fabric to make extra money. And it was a very manual process. And Sakichi Toyota worked to create these looms that were automated so that his mother didn't have to work so hard, so that women didn't have to work so hard. So when you think about it, he created a whole entire new way of working. When I was in Japan this summer with my friends from Tahoe Consulting, who I'm going to do the convention with, we went to the Toyota Commemorative Museum, and we saw that weaving loom. And it really made me think about that whole idea of creativity. How are we creating the new things that are going to be better for society, better for the people who do the work, better for our customers? How are we using what we think of as continuous improvement of lean to do those things?
Mm. We told you, I don't know if we know if we told you, we're going to go to Japan with Katie. So you're introducing us to Katie has got us maybe closer to going and visiting the exact same place you just mentioned. And it's also fascinating to me that it's both the creation, right? He invented that loom, and the creativity, the beauty of the fabrics being created. So I love that kind of dual side of the creativity.
Absolutely. And I think that you'll go there and you'll really love it.
Oh God, I can't wait. So your book is a workbook. And so people using it are solving problems, and you've got kind of assignments for them every day for 21 days. And I'm wondering, how did you get to that 21-day time frame?
Well, I think when I was growing up, we had the saying, it takes 21 days to make a habit. Now, do I really know 100% for sure if it has been documented in scientific research that it only takes 21 days to make a habit? I don't. What I do know from my own experience and the experience of others, that any habit that we're going to make and anything that we're going to get better at, it has to be done through disciplined practice. So in this workbook, there are exercises every single day for drawing. So there's the daily draw, so we can practice our creativity through drawing. There's a daily journaling exercise. There's the PDCA step, the next step that you're going to take while you're coaching the person who you're working with. And then there's a reflection step. And what I do know is that when we are going to do those 4 steps for 21 days in the same way. And there's also daily coaching preparation and daily reflection, which we do in the book, that we are going to develop the discipline. And after the discipline comes the stamina to keep going. Mm-hmm. So anything that we want to get better at, we need to practice regularly. And the best way to practice regularly is to practice daily.
It's so simple and just not generally a rule, you know, the daily practice. I do like your 21 day makes a habit rule. And I like you have no idea if there's based in science, but there's another one I've heard. If you don't do something for 40 days after you learn it, you'll lose it. So I often think about when we teach people something, it's like, use it right away. And I liked your words. You've got the structure and the stamina. I think that's a nice refrain. And then for anyone listening who doesn't know the reference to PDCA, that's the Improvement Cycle Plan, Do, Check, Act. So just using that lean or Dr. Deming-based model as part of your instruction, which is cool.
Yes, and I'm going to jump in here for a minute if you don't mind, because oftentimes we think of PDCA, Plan, Do, Check, Act, as the scientific method. As an artist, because I come to the continuous improvement world through the world of art, I have a master's degree in sculpture, I think of PDCA as the creative process. So I'll give you an example. In my mind, I had a very strong image and picture of what this book would look like, from the way the cover would look, to the pages, to the way the sections were going to flow. And then what I had to do was I had to turn that idea into a reality. So I started writing and I started drawing. And that's the do part. So I had the plan, what I imagined, then I started to do. Do you think right away it looked exactly like it was in my imagination?
Oh, I'm sure.
Not, right? So then I looked at the reality. I thought about what's in my imagination. I saw the gap between the target of what's in my imagination and the actual, the reality, the writing on the page, the little drawings, because I did all of the drawings for the book as well as all of the writing. Then I checked back and I adjusted what I was doing. And I kept doing that cycle until the book came to be actually really what was in my imagination. So something that didn't exist before turned into a reality through creativity, through plan, do, check, act. So actually, I call what I do practical creativity. Lots of times people think that what artists do, they make paintings, they make sculptures. It's not useful. It's not practical. However, I believe what Sakichi Toyoda was teaching and what I teach people is practical creativity. Take those ideas, turn them into useful things that are going to make work easier for people to do, new services and products for customers, and better ways for us to live in society. Creativity is extremely practical.
That's a really nice slant, and it resonates. PDCA being kind of an act of creation. And in my writing practice, I find I have what you said, I've got these bubbling of ideas. And then I put them to paper. There's the do. And what my guiding principle is, because I used to get tied up in getting the words down exactly as they should be, which is constricting. And I think there's a quote, I can't really use it in public, but Hemingway said, your first draft is, and it's another word for crap or something like that. And that was liberating, like just do it, because you've got those other cycles, as you're saying, you've got the check and adjust, check and act, however you look at it. But that's a great approach to creation. I love it.
Yeah, so I think that's a wonderful example. And then when you're finished writing, you have the blog, right? Or your fabulous book.
Right? And so sweet. So
I think that if we limit ourselves to thinking of PDCA only as the scientific method or only as something we're going to use to close a gap to standards. So a customer calls and says they have a problem. And of course, we're always going to fix a problem a customer has. But if that's the only thing we're going to use PDCA for, to return to a standard we already know, I actually think we're limiting ourselves and not using it as the creative process. And face it, the future is not what we already know. The world is changing. If we want to flourish and thrive and stay in businesses, organizations, and make a better world and solve the problems of the world, we're actually going to have to create different ways to do things.
And keep our brains positioned to think that way.
Absolutely.
That you're not fixing what is, that you're thinking about what could be. And the other thing I think that you're a fan of, and we are too, which is learning by doing, which is why your book is a workbook. So in your experience, what are the best ways, or some of the best ways you've seen people learn by doing?
Well, I'm going to preface this by saying that oftentimes I see people who limit themselves because they don't want to learn by doing. It's not that they don't want to learn by doing. They're worried to start to learn by doing. So people will tell me all the time, well, I haven't gone to enough training. I don't have enough experience. I haven't read enough about that. I don't have, as much experience as I should. So I can't do something. In my opinion, the best way to gain experience and to become confident in something is actually to start and do it. So I'm going to give you an example of my sewing. And I have wanted to sew for many, many, many years. And about 6 months ago, I decided, okay, even though I'm quite busy, I really want to do this and I'm going to start. And so I went to find a very nice sewing coach near my house, and I worked with her and I used a pattern and we made one dress. And after we made the one dress, I said, okay, now I'm going to start designing and creating my own patterns and sewing my own clothes. And she said, you've only made one dress. And I said, yes, but now I understand the basic idea. The only way for me to learn going forward is to start. And so I went to the fabric store and I bought all kinds of fabric. And the lady cutting the fabric said, oh, where's your pattern? I said, I don't have one. She said, why? I said, well, I've designed it myself. I'm making my own dress. She said, are you a very experienced seamstress? I said, no, I've only made one dress before. She said, are you crazy? So I started working on these dresses. Do you know how many times I have unpicked the seams?
I was going to say, did you make any mistakes?
Many, 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 many. And so I'm learning from making the mistakes. The second time I look and I say, oh, well, I didn't put the right sides of the fabric together. So when I sewed it together and I turned it inside out, oh, look, I have the inside facing on the outside. When I take it apart, I put it back together correctly the next time and learn how to put it together correctly. If we wait to start, then we don't have the opportunity to learn by doing. Theory is wonderful. The way we really learn is by putting that theory into practice and seeing what happens. Sometimes things work as we plan, sometimes they don't. But and we're going to learn either way.
Yeah, and I think what you've done is basically turned that fear of failure on its end, which is so critical, that because we don't want to do, you know, what you were being advised not to do. We don't want to make mistakes. We want, you know, here's a pattern. All you have to do is follow the directions, right? And you will succeed. And you're saying, but if I do that, then I don't learn. And luckily you have good calluses on your fingers so you could pick out those seams multiple times. Yes. But that you knew that was the path to figuring out how to be a designer as well as a seamstress who could follow a pattern.
And yes. That's why it was so important for me to write this as a workbook. So in the beginning of the workbook, on the very first day, you're asked to find someone to work with to coach. And you ask the person to help identify a problem they want to solve. It could be a work problem. It could be a home problem. It really doesn't matter. But what you then do is with the person, you work through 21 days of helping them solve the problem. And each day in the book has a very short theory section on lean-in services, a very short theory section on creativity, and a very short theory section on coaching, like maybe a page and a half of the whole book. You then immediately put that theory, you turn it into practice working with the person that you're coaching. So you have flow. You don't learn a batch of theory. You read it, you try it out in reality with the person you're coaching. So many people I know who work as continuous improvement coaches in so many organizations, they didn't have coaching previously. They didn't have the help of someone teaching them. I really wanted this book to function as their coach and for them to be able to immediately turn that theory into practice, because unless we do that, we can't gain confidence. Confidence comes from doing. Mm-hmm. So the book, 21 days, guides you through the whole cycle. By the time you're finished, you'll have had 21 days of lean in services, theory, flow, leveling, waste, all those kinds of things, creativity, all kinds of things about divergent thinking and thinking, synthesis, and coaching. Very basic coaching for people at all levels of the organization.
This is a great model. And I'm on Tinder hooks to get my copy. I know it's just out. But the other thing that you add, and you gave us this feedback when you looked at our book before we published it, and you said, it's great to add reflections. And just doing that after each segment, like, okay, what did you learn? And just reflecting on what worked, what didn't work, what adjustments, which means that takes time. You got to stop and take stock and think and adjust. And I think that informs a lot of my everyday thinking. Now, every morning is reflections on the day before, you know, what have I taken away? So anyway, I want to thank you for that. That is now it's a habit. I've done it more than 21 days.
You're very welcome. And I think you're going to be happy to know that not only does each of the 20 days end with reflection, day 21 in the book is called Time to Reflect.
Time to Reflect.
A reflection on all of your reflections. And I'm just going to read you a little bit from the writing of the book. And it says, because it walks you through a set of questions, and they're the same questions as we ask ourselves each day during the book. And so then it says, but those are simply the questions that I ask myself at the end of every day. Why do I need to spend extra time reflecting on them again now? And all of us, no matter who we are, no matter how long we've practiced reflection, can always get better at it. We can always go deeper. We can always be more honest with ourselves. We gain new insights. So the book ends with reflection, because it's really the best and only way that I know to end.
Well played. I like it.
Thank you.
No, that's wonderful. And this is just more of my reflection of, you know, I've gotten to travel with you. We've got to have a nice road trip to a Lean Frontiers conference. And I was impressed that aside from your focus on service excellence, you spent a lot of time promoting love and kindness at all of your appearances. And I want to ask you, are you seeing any progress?
You know, I'm going to say absolutely. And thank you for asking me, because really love and kindness is extremely important to me. And it's something that all of us can create. And so many people write to me now, either on LinkedIn or by email, about different things they're doing to promote love and kindness. And I've sent love and kindness buttons all over the world. I mailed some to Pakistan the other day. And a Canadian teacher that I met on LinkedIn, because it's Random Acts of Kindness Week, and February 17th will be Random Acts of Kindness Day, she took the 30 buttons I sent her, and her whole school is doing kindness activities with the 30 buttons.
Aww.
So it's really taking off. I'll be starting a foundation called the Love and Kindness Project Foundation that should be going by the beginning of March, and will be fostering projects just like Love Kindness Button Project to create love and kindness in the world. Mm-hmm. So if anybody would like any love and kindness buttons, please just reach out to me.
And I'll let you tell them how to do that in a moment. But I want to, before we wrap up, can you tell our listeners about your conference and what makes this convention different from other operational excellence gatherings?
Oh, thank you for asking. The first global convention on organizational excellence, which will be May 2nd and 3rd in Orlando, Florida, is going to be a really unique experience for people because we believe that people learn by doing and that we're going to create connections globally across the world. We're not breaking out at this conference. What we're doing is we're staying together, divided into learning cohorts. The learning cohorts will be co-led by a keynote speaker such as myself or Katie Anderson and a business expert. So we have people coming to share their experience from Canada, from United States, from Europe, from Brazil, from Argentina, and we'll be learning together. Each of the sessions is totally interactive. So you'll be working in a logbook, creating your journey to organizational excellence. And we're really thinking about creating the future because, as I said, the future is not what we already know. So if you want to be connected, if you want to be part of creating the future, please join us in Florida for a 100% interactive learn by doing experience.
And although Tracy and I originally said, hey, we are absolutely going to Karen's conference, then you introduced us to Katie, and now we're going to Japan the week afterwards. So now we have to decide, can we get in the Orlando conference before going to Japan? And I know you're going to say, of course you can.
Of course you can. You know, I believe I can't. Not spoken here.
Not spoken here. Oh, I love it. Nope. We haven't said no yet. But before I let you go, how can someone find or communicate with you, Karen, as I know you love to do that?
Absolutely. You can send me an email to Karen, K-A-R-Y-N, at KarenRossConsulting.com. You can send me a message on LinkedIn. You can give me a call, 630-881-3068. Actually, you know what? I answer my own phone, and I respond to every single person who contacts me, whether by email, whether by LinkedIn message. It's a joy and an honor and a privilege to help and know each and every single person who I have the joy to meet.
And you do, Karen, and you do it promptly. So I will second that.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast. My guest today has been Karen Ross, author of Coaching for Creativity and Service Excellence. If you'd like to learn by doing and get better at coaching others for creativity, this is just the book for you. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your kindness with our listeners today, Karen.
Thanks, Elizabeth, and I can't wait to see you soon.
Yeah. Tune in for Tracy's next webinar, How Leaders Build a Culture of Process Improvement. That's on Thursday, February 28th at 11 a.m. Pacific. Also, if you don't have plans for the week of May 12th, join Tracy and me for the Japan study trip. Katie Anderson is in Japan as we speak, firming up additions to the cultural side of the tour. She's been sending great tweets. You can find her at KBJ Anderson on Twitter.
And join us for the next episode where we interview Shane Wentz, who is the Global Director of Continuous Improvement for Radial Incorporated. And he's also applied process improvement to places like Nike and Siemens, as well as the U.S. Army.
Thanks for spending some quality time with us here at the Just in Time Cafe.